aggressively using torture in an attempt to find a way to try and undermine Al Jazeera, the network.
I mean, it is astounding. I mean, for people in the United States to understand a top reporter from NBC or CNN or ABC being held for years in a prison somewhere, being questioned about those, you know, someone at NBC being questioned about General Electric, right, which partly owns NBC.
Yeah, right. Well, no, exactly. But, you know, I mean, you know, as we were discussing before with the, you know, with all of the wrong people ending up in Guantanamo and all the spurious reasons for sending people there. And I actually think that they came second, Amy, because the thing that that I meant to say before was that, you know, there was an interrogator called Chris Mackey. It's a pseudonym, but he wrote a book about, he was a senior interrogator in Afghanistan, about the process of prisoners being sent to Guantanamo. And he said there effectively was no screening process. What happened was that all the lists of prisoners were sent to the top brass who were in Camp Doha in Kuwait. And their instructions came back, every single Arab that ends up in U.S. custody has to be sent to Guantanamo. And for the first 6 months, that applied to every Afghan as well. So essentially, there was no screening process. Everybody went to Guantanamo, nothing was known about them, and then they had to invent these reasons as to why they were holding them. And that's what I think is in those documents. They say, oh yeah, we sent this person here to exploit them for intelligence on such and such. They actually grafted that on afterwards. When they arrived, they didn't even know who most of these people were.
The Casio watches, very quickly.
The Casio watch, which dozens of prisoners were accused of having, was supposed to be something that was used to trigger improvised electronic devices, roadside bombs. I mean, in fact, you know, it's a Casio watch that was an incredibly popular model. So, you know, just another spurious basis. So ways of inventing why you were holding people. I mean, the same thing happened with missionary organizations. Jamaat al-Tabligh, for example, a huge missionary organization, millions of members worldwide. All the prisoners accused of being involved with the missionary organization, they said it was a front for terrorism. It's like accusing the Catholic Church of being a front for terrorism because of the IRA, for example. And it's not on any list of proscribed organizations by the State Department or any other U.S. government organization. It's symptomatic of how, in Guantanamo, it was a world unto itself. And they, really, the military invented any kind of reason that it could to hold people.
Andy Worthington, finally, now you have Guantanamo continuing, though President Obama first said it would close, one of the first statements he made when he took office. And then you have the Obama administration deciding to try five men accused of the 9/11 attacks before a military commission at Guantanamo instead of a civilian court. The significance of this, we have 30 seconds.
Well, I think, you know, I think that the documents about these high-value detainees, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, we saw from the indictment that was dropped because the federal court trial was blocked, essentially by Republicans in the Senate, but also by Democrats. The federal court trial, there seems to be a case. Surely this should be allowed to go ahead. These are the men allegedly responsible for the 9/11 attacks. What this was all supposed to be about, Amy, the reason that the Bush administration threw all laws to the four winds, broke all laws and treaties and created this abomination, which still exists. It's still an abomination at Guantanamo. People held as though they were still enemy combatants with no rights. It's really distressing, and I wish that there could be a federal court trial for these men.
Andy Worthington, thanks so much for being with us, and a very happy birthday
to
Manal Khan. I'm Amy Goodman.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is More Talk Radio, hosted by Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Today's topic is Measure 26-121, a bond for the Portland Public Schools to update and renovate our public school buildings.
KBOO is proud to partner with Hopworks Urban Brewery in introducing the KBOO Radio IPA on tap at the Hub Brew Pub, located at 2944 Southeast Powell. Hub is Portland's first eco brew pub, offering organic beers in a sustainably built and operated building. The KBOO Radio IPA will be available during our spring membership drive from April 28th through May 14th. To find out more what this partnership means for KBOO, kboo.fm/IPA.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You're listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey, and you're here at KBOO at 90.7 in the metro area, 91.9 if you're in the Columbia River Gorge. In the Willamette River Valley, it's 100.7, and in the ether, it's KBOO.FM.
This morning, we have the opportunity to talk about a couple of measures that people in the Portland Public School District will vote on. Ballots will be mailed out this Friday, and they are due back on May 17. The two measures are Measure 26-122 and also 26-121. We may have heard much about these measures, operating levy and a building bond. Joining us this morning are two people who will speak about the issues and their positions on it. Joining us this morning are Bobby Regan, who will speak in favor of both measures, and also joining us is Lainey Block Wilker, who is from Learn Now, Build Later, and will speak on in favor of the operating levy and opposing the building bond.
Right, the building bond.
Okay. Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Yes,
thank
good,
you
morning.
So much.
Good morning. Good
morning. Why don't we begin with you, Bobby, and share?
Sure. So I'm Bobby Regan. I'm a Portland Public School parent and a longtime schools advocate, 20 years of business experience, PTA president in two schools. And I've been on the school board for 8 years, and the school board is bringing forward both of these measures. So I appreciate being on here today. Measure 26-122 is our operating levy, a renewal of our operating levy for Portland Public Schools. Both Lainey and I agree that we have dire need to continue to maintain teachers in our buildings so we can have reasonable class sizes. There are no voter statements in opposition to this in the voter pamphlet, so we're really thrilled about that. On our capital facilities bond, I'm particularly grateful to be able to talk about this long overdue investment in our schools and our kids. When parents send their kids to school every morning, the most important thing they expect is that we are going to keep their children safe. And yet our buildings are crumbling with leaking pipes, outdated electrical systems, windows and roofs that leak, dirty, unsafe, and inefficient oil burners, water fountains that offer brown, rusty water, pipes in our halls and libraries that literally read, "Warning, contains asbestos fibers, avoid creating dust, cancer, lung disease, hazard." In Portland, we can do better. Our buildings need to be rebuilt over time to sustain a major earthquake. They have outdated classrooms, science labs with one or no sinks, non-existent technology labs, poor lighting, poor ventilation. Every single school district around us has a capital facilities bond in place to fund these kinds of needed improvements in their schools. Portland is the lone exception. So Measure 26-121 will allow Portland to ensure that our schools are safe, that our classrooms are suitable for teaching and learning, and by having a separate pot of money for facilities repairs, it will actually help us to protect our operating dollars.
Thank you. And Lainey.
Thank you. Thank you for hosting. My name is Lainey Block Wilker. I'm with a pro-schools group called Learn Now, Build Later. I'm also a Portland Public Schools parent. I have two daughters in actually one of the worst facilities, and we all agree the facilities are in awful shape. The issue is whether this is whether we can come up with a better plan to fix them. I am also a dedicated advocate for public schools and have worked on every Portland Public Schools measure since my daughters were in preschool. But this goes beyond our buildings, and the issue is that our classroom education is in crisis, and we need a more logical plan before we dump money into buildings that we can't afford to operate. I'm with a group of concerned parents and educators who support the learning levy to preserve class sizes, teachers, and educational programs, and we are in complete agreement the levy is absolutely essential for our classrooms. While our schools need repairs, this is the wrong bond at the wrong time with the wrong priorities, and is not linked to a plan to adequately fund classroom learning. These are tough economic times, and this bond asks for too much money to serve too few students. Portland Public needs to go back to the drawing board and design a safer and more cost-efficient bond that serves the most students in the worst facilities. This bond illogically prioritizes rebuilds of small schools while leaving most of our students to wait 10 to 25 years for safe and updated learning environments. Sadly, this bond puts politics first and kids second. The harsh economic reality in this district is that we can't afford to operate all 85 schools and provide a decent education in those buildings. We have a $40 million budget shortfall, and the operating levy will only cover about half of that. So given these budget shortfalls, it is not financially responsible to spend $548 million on renovations across all 85 schools when we face likely closures and consolidations. Straining across 85 schools and sinking money into small schools will increase our class sizes, decrease educational offerings, and could even worsen our appalling 53% graduation rate. So it's time to slow down, make some tough decisions about how many schools we can operate, and rework a better bond. And in this recession, we need to prioritize classroom learning and design a safer and cost-efficient bond for better times.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. We're having a discussion about a couple of measures that Portland Public School residents will vote on on the May 17th ballot. Bobby, do you want to respond to some of the concerns that Lainey raised?
Sure, and I'm really glad we're having this opportunity. So what I want to mention first is that the facilities bond is the culmination of years and years of work by the school board, of community meetings, of analysis by experts, input from independent engineers. We conducted assessments on the condition of the buildings, on the historic significance of our buildings. We've done intensive seismic studies over the past years to respond to Lainey's discussion about our footprint. Portland Public Schools has closed 12 schools in the last 10 years. And we have worked very, very closely with Seattle Public Schools on lessons they've learned as they started their rebuilding process. Seattle's about halfway through now. Updating and upgrading all of their schools. So there are 26 statements in favor of this bond in the voter pamphlet statement reflecting broad community support. The bond is endorsed by the Portland PTA, by Stanford Children, by the Portland Business Alliance, the Portland Police and Firefighters Association, Portland Teachers, the League of Women Voters, the American Heart Association, and many others. And if you haven't yet looked online, there are five statements in opposition, and not a single one even mentions the condition of our schools. And this is a capital facilities bond. Instead, you have anti-tax individuals and groups lament having to pay taxes at all with statements like, here's a quote, refuse all tax increases and vote out illegal alien pardoning politicians. Here's another quote, there are higher priorities than fixing schools. They complain about urban renewal and other issues rather than focusing on our kids. The fact is, 83 of our 85 schools are in dire need of work. We can't wait any longer, And it's why I hope people will vote yes on Measure 26-121 on May 17th.
All righty. And then, Lainey?
Thank you. And again, thanks for giving us an opportunity. I wanted to talk about this idea that this is years in the making, and it is, because I was actually at many of those meetings. We spent 3 years and $1 million evaluating the condition of these buildings. I'm also a member of the PTA, a member of Stanford Children. I'm a reasonable mom who has worked on every measure. I'm not a crazy anti-tax activist. But the reality is this was forced as a take-it-or-leave-it bond with a 30-day period for public comment. It was rolled out right before Christmas, and there actually, if you attended some of these hearings, you had PTA leaders, Stanford Children leaders, foundation people, all raising questions about seismic safety, about cost efficiencies, about priorities, about whether we had a plan to educate our kids. But again, it was take it or leave it. There was no chance to fix it and do it better. We have facilities rankings. We did not follow those facilities rankings. I also want to talk about seismic safety, because I know this is a big issue for many parents. And the simple truth is that this is not a seismic safety bond. It will not save lives. Apart from rebuilds of predominantly small schools, and remember that 5 of the 9 schools that are slated for full rebuilds are small schools serving less than 500 students. So, for instance, those 370 students at Markham, they will be safe. The 750 students at Alameda in a building rated highly likely to collapse will have to wait 10 to 25 years for seismic upgrades. We have 15 schools in Portland Public that are rated very likely to collapse in the event of a quake, and this bond does work in only 2 of those schools.
Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 here in the city. We will be opening our lines for calls, so bingo the number in case you've not called before. And we do invite new callers, especially those who have parents who have children in the schools, or guardians, or anyone who has children in the schools, and to hear your concerns. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And we'll go to our first caller. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I appreciate your program. I have 2 children who graduated from Portland Public Schools. One of those in Sin University, and someone's community college. And I'm still not convinced that taxpayers should be burdened with such a levy right now, such an increase in our property taxes, given the fact that Portland Public School teachers have provided such poor results in terms of graduation rates and time in classrooms with students. I feel like we have one of the shortest school years in the country, and I believe that this is actually a tactic by the teachers' unions to divert attention and to maintain control over the funding mechanism of Portland Public Schools. The teachers' unions exert an inordinate amount of influence over public schools in Portland, and I'm very discouraged, and I don't oppose all taxes, but I'd like to know if Bobby Reagan has, any taxes that she does oppose. And, what business experience does she have where she feels that, such a burden like this can be borne, given the results that Portland Public Schools have produced in terms of graduation rates?
Okay,
and then the last question is,
Steve, please, hold on. We have to give them time to answer, and at best we might get 1 question apiece for both of them, because we like to have them both have a chance. You've brought up some really good questions, and so we'll take maybe the first 2. We'll start with Bobby.
Okay. I think that the most important thing Steve brings up is the fact that our funding for schools in general is abysmal. And the only tool that Portland Public Schools has to address this is going out for a operating levy to try to keep teachers in our classroom and maintain reasonable class sizes, or to go out for a facilities bond to protect our operating dollars. So K-12 education in Oregon has seen its share of the state budget decrease dramatically over the years. This has nothing to do with how Portland runs its schools. It has to do with state funding. This is the only tool we have, which is why we're going out. I actually believe that Portland Public Schools is on a great trajectory in terms of student achievement. We have a well-loved superintendent. We have strong leadership on this board at last. We have a new milestone framework where we are actually addressing specific points in time in a student's life where they need, where we can predict whether they're going to succeed at the next level or not. We're putting interventions in place. But all of that in the background requires some adequate funding, and that's what we need to be doing.
Steve, thank you for bringing up the 53% graduation rate, because it is a big issue in this district. And what parents and voters need to understand is this bond, as designed, as we strain across 85 schools that we can't afford to operate, it will increase our class sizes. It will decrease academic programs, and it could worsen this graduation rate. So we have, again, a massive budget shortfall. Every other district in this state is evaluating consolidations so that we can provide a broad and rigorous curriculum to as many students as possible. So it's very expensive to run a small school. By consolidating, you can offer a wider array of classes. You can offer enrichment programs and clubs that keep kids engaged in school. And as we strain across 85 schools and spend a lot of money on small schools, it comes at a cost to the 47,000 students in this district.
Now, Steve, will that work for you?
I'm very discouraged by the response. He doesn't address the fundamental failure that we are asked to reward. 53% graduation rate. By the way, we want you to pay an extra $400 to $500 a month on your property taxes for home. Give us more. And this is just a start. This doesn't even improve every school. I'm so discouraged by the leadership and the fact that the board is so beholden to the teachers union and it doesn't represent the parents. Teachers, our students need to spend more days in class with instructors. We have one of the shortest school years in the country, and yet our cost per student is exorbitant. So, okay,
Steve, we need to go to other callers. I just want clarification on your opinions. So I assume you're opposing the operating levy, and what about the building bond?
Yes, I'm in opposition to both those.
Both those. Okay, we need to move on. So thank you for
calling. Thank you so much for raising your points.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. We're having a discussion this morning about the May election ballot, Measure 26-122 and Measure 26-121.
And just for clarity's sake, Measure 121 is the bond to renovate, rebuild, and update safety features in schools. And then 122 is to fund teaching positions at the schools.
Yes.
Joining us this morning are Lainey Block-Wilker from Learn Now, Build Later, and Bobby Regan. And they both are in support of the levy measure, but disagree on the bond measure itself.
That's right.
All righty. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, good morning. You know, first of all, you know, those ladies should be ashamed to even admit they connected with the Portland School Board.
Like, Michael, we're having difficulty hearing you.
Can you get closer to the phone or switch channels?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you go. That's better.
Well, I'm saying, first of all, I agree with the guy that just got off. Portland Public School, it has a dismal record in terms of education. Plus, I don't like the way that they label minority kids as having a learning disability to generate federal money. And also, I think it costs the same amount of money to educate a child in the public school system as it does for children that go to private school. And so that's pretty much my question.
Okay, that was Mike. I'm not sure I understood his question, but Lainey, maybe you should... Do you want to respond?
Sure.
To
well, you know, I'd actually just like to talk briefly about educational outcomes because, you know, we're spending a lot of money to rebuild schools without dealing with very cost-effective, targeted, strategic measures that actually improve educational outcomes. For instance, the most effective way to deal with our just glaring achievement gap is to offer quality after-school and summer school programs. That's the largest That's the best way to bridge the achievement gap. To run a quality after-school program through SUN, it costs $100,000. It's a very effective way to leverage community partnerships. And if you have kids from disadvantaged homes who don't have reading materials, they're getting quality educational programming. So, for instance, instead of spending, if we were realizing some operational efficiencies and consolidating some of these smaller schools, we could offer SUN after-school programs at every school. Another very targeted strategic way of bridging the achievement gap is by early reading programs, because if a child has not met reading benchmarks by third grade, they're four times as likely to drop out. So AVID after-school reading programs, you can do targeted interventions with high-risk kids to get them up to reading speed. That costs $60,000 to offer.
That's a $60,000 per school?
Correct. Okay. Correct. So again, by realizing some operational efficiencies, we could be putting AVID targeted reading programs at every school. In terms of academic achievement, we could be offering dual college, and we could be offering international baccalaureate, which is a more rigorous level of academics. We could be offering that across the board. So what we're saying is, let's be smart with our limited dollars and try to protect and educate the most students.
Thank you.
So I'm in complete agreement with Lainey in terms of our need to provide programs such as AVID, SUN Schools, International Baccalaureate, Middle College programs, and we are doing that, and we are looking to expand that every way we can. One of the ways that we can expand it is to spend less money maintaining old, outdated facilities. So our buildings at this point are 65 years old on average. Some are up to 100 years old. In terms of some efficiencies that we would gain that we could put right into our operating dollars to provide programs that Lainey likes, we have things like 45 of our schools have old oil furnaces. They take 7 hours a week to maintain. If we had gas furnaces, they would be 7 hours a year. I mean, if you look at that efficiency in Rosa Park School, which was built in the last few years, we save 30% in terms of our energy costs. That could go right back into the classroom. There are so many ways that our buildings are just leaking energy and efficiency. It's time for us to start reinvesting in this. It's time to start reinvesting in appropriate science classrooms for our kids. It will make a huge difference going forward.
Before we go to our next caller, we have a consensus in terms of supporting the operating levy. And a disagreement on the building bond itself. It seems as if we all want good schools for our children, and we want them to learn in a good environment. Why is it, Lainey, that you oppose the building bond measure at this time? Are you asking for us to defer maintenance at this time, or defer a way in which to finance it?
Or maybe reprioritize some of the elements of the bond.
That's correct. Thank you, Cecil and Celeste. We're asking for a better and smarter and safer bond where we really look at the priorities and we look at the buildings that serve the most kids that are in the worst condition. We look at safety. And most importantly, before we spend money on 85 buildings, we really need to make some tough choices about how many buildings we can afford to operate before we put $548 million into those buildings. So, yes, it's about priorities. It's about safety. It's about serving the most students in the worst buildings and linking it to a plan to educate our kids.
And, Bobby, your view is that this is a well-thought-out proposal.
Yes, there was years of work that went into this. In terms of the bond itself, we did a bond back in 1995. That bond focused on accessibility, on technology improvements. We went through and 53 schools. We did seismic upgrades so that they were exit safe. We only built one school, only one school. This time as we're going out, we want to continue to do safety improvements across all of our schools because we absolutely must. They're in terrible shape. But we also want to start going deep on some. We have 83 schools in our district that are in need of drastic repairs. We have done no really significant rebuilds since about 1945 in our schools. So when those nine schools were looked at, you know, we could spend the next 5 years trying to figure out which are the first nine schools to go. We literally could do it, and we would never come to a consensus in this town on which are the first nine should go. What we looked at was trying to front-load high schools. So this is a six-year capital bond. We hope to do a great job and renew it every 6 years going forward until we start getting through our inventory of schools. We're front-loading our high schools so that all high schools will be done within the first three bonds. We are highlighting our schools that are in the most need of repair. Laurelhurst is our worst condition school right now. East Sylvan is our second worst condition school right now. Rigler is right up there. If we were only looking at the condition of the facilities, we wouldn't actually include any high schools in this bond. Our elementary and K-8s are in dire shape. Marysville, which just burned, is in this facilities bond. So again, we could spend the next 5 years trying to figure out which of the nine schools should have gone first. What we wanted to do is have buildings in every part of town, to front load high schools, and to start hitting the schools that are in the worst condition.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city. We're talking about the school bond measures, Measure 26121, which refers to construction, renovation, rebuilding, updating safety features in the schools, and 26122, which would fund teaching positions at all of the Portland public schools. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you can by calling 503-231-8187. And we're speaking with Bobby Regan, who represents the pro side for both measures, and Lainey Block, and I'm sorry, suddenly I had a blank on your last name.
Block Welker,
there we go, sorry, who represents pro for the teaching fund aspect of the measures. I've heard a couple of questions here, and we will get to our callers here. One of the things that I'm sure a lot of our callers are wondering, and our listeners even, is that you've proposed what seems to be to you a reasonable amount. This on the median house of about, we'll say $275,000, with maybe roughly $145,000 actual assessed value. Mm-hmm. That's going to be an additional $290. Given the recent changes in our housing economy, our jobs economy, the fact that a lot of people have lost houses due to foreclosures, do you really think this is a sustainable plan? Because if we're seeing shrinking housing and people who are able to afford their housing, how will they afford even this small bump, given our also very staggeringly high unemployment rates and foreclosure rates? That would be for Bobby.
Okay, I would love to take that on. We know that the economy is tough. We also know that for the median household, you're talking about a dollar a day or so for this capital bond, or about $30 or less a month. And that may be enough to put someone over the edge, but likely there's a whole lot of other factors in there. I think most folks understand that education is, in fact, their ticket out of poverty, and the investment is well worth it. When you look at the cost of this bond, which is $2 per thousand of assessed value, and it's really important for people to understand it's your assessed value. It's not what you could sell your home for.
It's not the market value. It's the assessed value.
When you look at that, we actually very intentionally priced it at $2 per thousand of assessed value because every single district around us has a capital facilities bond in place. That includes areas, you know, east of 182nd that people would think of as a lot poorer, perhaps, than Portland proper, or Portland Central. Those districts, citizens are paying $1.09 per thousand up to $4.56 per thousand, depending on the school district they're in. So every single person in those districts is already paying on a capital bond, and it shows if you go out to those districts and you look at their schools, in general, they are in great condition compared to what we are offering our children in Portland Public Schools. The fact of the matter is, we in Portland have, any school district across the state has no other option in terms of improving their school facilities other than going out for a local capital bond. We don't have system development fees that take care of schools. We don't have matching funds from the state. This is the tool that school districts have to use.
I'd like to address the issue of financial hardship because you're right. These are very difficult times. We have high unemployment. We have people underwater with their mortgages. And when you're asking for this much money, it needs to benefit more students. A third of this half of $1 billion goes to rebuilds of schools that serve only 6% of our students. So when Bobby talked about front-loading high schools, the three high schools that are on this are Cleveland, Jefferson, and Roosevelt. That's a third of half $1 billion. Two of those three are our smallest high schools. So we're saying when we're asking for this much money from taxpayers, and this is a big hardship, let's give them bang for the buck. Let's serve more students. When we're rebuilding small schools, and again, 5 of 9 are small schools, that is not a wise use of taxpayer money. And what could these hundreds of millions of dollars, what could that buy in terms of increased seismic safety for more students, updated learning environments for more students? So again, we'd like to rework this to a smarter, safer, and more cost-efficient bond in better times when people are not underwater.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll go to our next caller. Thank you for holding. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I've been a volunteer parent in Portland Public Schools for the last decade, and I volunteered at the elementary, middle school, and high school levels. And I've always been struck by the schools are old, they're in bad shape, they're leaking roofs. And these are things that I've kind of become used to. But I have recently had the opportunity, with my daughter being on speech and debate, to travel throughout the state and visit schools like Glencoe, Silverton, Tualatin, Clackamas. And I realize not every school has to be like the schools that I've been in Portland Public Schools. When my daughter and her teammates visit these schools, the level of student pride in the facility is amazing. And I think from a standpoint of looking at these issues, these are our schools in Portland Public Schools. It's not just the administrators and their decisions. These are schools that belong to our community and have pride in our facilities. It's like investing in something that matters. And for me, having looked back at my time, I think of meetings that I've sat in on site councils and PTAs where the heater is making so much noise, you can't even hear what's being said. I've heard my daughter come back from schools where they've had to wear their jackets all day long and sometimes gloves because the facility was so cold due to a boiler that was out. I've been in places where the water has leaked down. And I look at that and I think, can we do better? I think we can. And I do feel frustrated that we don't have the money immediately to meet all kids' needs because we are responsible for all 47,000-plus students in our school district. But to delay this further, to have more and more discussion, puts off something that we need to begin today. And that's basically making these schools more safe from a fire perspective, upgrading the equipment that poses real risk, like some of these school stages, auditoriums, and cafeterias. They just have dangerous equipment.
So, Jenny, let me ask you a question as a parent. Are you also going to be hit by this increase with the levy if we pass both?
Yes.
And how do you feel about this increased tax burden?
I feel like it's my responsibility. It's my time to pay into the system. Basically, the levies that Portland has done to compensate for the funding shortfalls coming from Salem has been what we've been accustomed to. But we've kind of put off this bond issue. And I think it's time. Do I love it? No. I mean, who says they have extra money now to do the right thing? There's never a time when you can honestly say I'd rather spend money for something other than what's immediately on your list of things to do, but this is the responsible thing.
And then really quick, as a parent and a homeowner, have you considered that there might be another plan that might be more effective, and have you brought that plan forward, or are you satisfied with this plan and its oversight and the rollout process?
I think there's always another plan. I mean, but Portland has a tendency to talk things into the ground. The population likes to give a lot of input.
Extreme process-oriented, yes.
It's a lovely thing, and it's a great place to live in. And despite the fact that I do not like the funding formula for education in Oregon, I love Portland because I love that input. But at the end of the day, a decision needs to be made, and I do have confidence in the administrative decisions on this one, because they know the buildings, they know the priorities, they know how to meet the needs of the various sectors. I mean, we're going to have school closures. We're going to have different things that are going to affect population needs. But we still have facilities that we as the people own, and whether or not, you know, how those decisions are made, I don't have all those all that information.
Well, great. That's perfect.
To decide. So I do have confidence, and I think now is the time. I do not think we have time to wait on this and do further deliberation.
Well, thank you so much, Jenny. And we're going to go to our next caller. Good morning, Jane.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Jane, and I am a Portland Public School mother, and I'm calling with a different perspective on process than the previous caller.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a good 2 years involved with the high school redesign process, and there were some very difficult decisions that needed to be made as part of that process that, frankly, the administration and the board were unable to rise up to. And on the heels of that, there are front-ending high schools, which I think is fine. I'm supportive. I think all of our schools are in dire conditions. But I do question the investment in rebuilding two high schools in one part of our community, North Portland, that are serving the smallest high school populations. And there are other schools that are serving much, you know, in some cases twice as many students that will not have a rebuild investment. And I'm wondering on the policy side if knowing that we are going to need to finish the work of the high school redesign, and that will mean at least one other high school will be closed, what is it saying to the high school communities that are not being rebuilt at this time? Is it kind of putting them on notice that their schools are vulnerable?
Well, thank you, Jane. We'll have our guests respond to your query.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Bobby, you first.
Yes. So in terms of the process, one thing that's important to remember is that 2 years ago, the board was in the process of going out for a capital facilities bond. We literally had a board meeting to announce that we weren't going to do that because we wanted to have a discussion about high schools and figure out how we would put those into our bond. We went through a very, very detailed process of redesigning our high schools. That's being implemented now to begin next year. The goal of our high school redesign was to ensure that we had neighborhood schools that were large enough that we could offer a robust curriculum with enrichments, with advanced placement, international baccalaureate opportunities, dual credit opportunities, and supports for every kid. We also wanted to ensure that we had some career technical education opportunities built into those high schools. In order to get enough children into those, we made the tough decision last year, and I have to tell you that closing schools is the absolute most difficult thing you can possibly do as a school board member, and I've done it over and over again. We made the difficult decision to close Marshall High School, and we made the decision to close Jefferson High School as a community comprehensive. What I'm really excited about is that we are now going to be offering a focus program called a middle college program in the Jefferson area, which is going to give our kids in that area and across Portland some incredible new opportunities. Urban school districts across the country have middle college programs. You typically locate these in high minority, high poverty areas near a community college. The idea is that children can actually, while they're in high school, take a full year of community college, and if they're motivated, they can actually graduate from high school with an associate degree. So when you look at folks in the Jefferson area, oftentimes the huge milestone is that they graduated from high school, oftentimes the first in their family. When I go to graduations, it is celebratory. What we want to do, though, is to give these kids an opportunity to be successful college kids while they're in high school and while we hold their hands through that. Roosevelt High School, just to tell you, is not a small high school going forward. It is a large high school that will have 12 to 1,300 kids. That's what we're building for.
Thank you. And Lainey.
Sure. If I could actually speak to high school redesign, because it probably is not over. And the reality is that we can't afford to operate 9 high schools and offer a broad and rigorous curriculum with enrichment that keeps kids engaged in school. And high school education is the biggest loser in this bond. I want to talk to this idea of closing Jefferson. The reality is that Jefferson is receiving a $50 million rebuild with less than 400 students. And while that middle college program might be promising, only 72 students participated in that program, and they spend half the day across the street on the PCC campus. Offering a middle college program doesn't require a $50 million rebuild. That program was actually piloted by students from Roosevelt. So when we're looking at how we can fairly allocate scarce resources to benefit the most students, this is kind of a glaring example of that not being done. Jefferson also has one of the better facilities rankings of all high schools. In comparison, if we were really looking at applying the criteria of serving the most students in the worst facilities, Franklin High School and Grant High School have far worse facilities. They serve 1,500 students.
But let me ask a question of you then here, Lainey. I understand that Jefferson is also, while the amount of the rebuild is listed as $15 million, I know that there have been offers of private partnerships and that other organizations like PDC has offered to help pay for it, and alumnus have helped pay to help pay for some of that rebuild. And I know the Portland Public Schools turned it down initially. So what's to be said about the fact that there are partners out there who are willing to shoulder the burden without passing on some expense to the taxpayer? And why isn't there more emphasis on arranging these types of partnerships?
Well, partnerships are a good idea. I think at the end of the day, it's $50 million for one of the better high school facilities that serves the least number of students. So if we're talking about, you know, fairly serving our children, it doesn't meet any of those criteria.
Well, in one way, it also does. One thing that I've not heard really brought out, and it was kind of hinted at by some of our callers, is looking at areas that have been historically deprived or underfunded. And that's an area that has been historically deprived or underfunded. Right now, and just to give you a little information about my familiarity with schools, from 97 to 2000, I spent time as an AmeriCorps member as part of the I Have a Dream program, and my caseload ran from Roosevelt all the way out to San Barlow. So I was at quite a few of the high schools in the metro area and got a chance to look at them. And so I can attest that in many ways, a lot of the building structures are as people have described. One of the things, though, that I'm a little dismayed about is recognizing that if the building is part of what gives students bad morale and that we have schools that have underperforming students, that maybe that is a good reason to front load certain schools.
Did you want me to address that?
Let's see how are we on our. Let me get a high time for my interview. We got two callers. Yes, briefly, please. If you both would just touch that briefly.
Okay. Well, when you talked about partnerships, again, if we're looking at educational outcomes and how we can be how we can make the best use of our scarce resources. Again, we talked about Sun After School programs. For $50 million, how many Sun After School programs could we run? We talked about the AVID reader programs by spending a lot of money on high school facilities. It's not a cost-efficient way of bridging an achievement gap, because the reality is if you haven't met benchmarks by third grade, you're four times as likely to drop out. And the other thing is we have 47,000 kids in this district, and the idea of this bond is to serve the most students. When we're spending a third of the bond money on 6% of the student population, it's not a fair use of scarce resources. I mean, I get that's the bottom line.
Okay. So okay. I would love to address some of the things that Lainey is saying. First of all, she keeps talking about SUN programs. We have SUN programs in our schools. We would not be able to use a penny of the money that is brought in through our operating facilities bond from our capital facilities bond. We could not use a penny of that for operations. It is illegal. So these are two completely separate things. We are going out for the maximum amount we can locally in our operating levy so that we can do exactly what Lainey wants us to do, which is to provide supports under our kids and wraparound services and teachers. That's what we're going out for. In terms of the facilities bond, what we're trying to do is to have safe buildings and academically appropriate buildings for our kids to learn in. And we have some huge, wonderful partners coming to the table. At Fabian, Concordia University is coming to the table and working with us. At Jefferson, PCC just passed the largest capital facilities bond in the state's history, $400 million. They are at the table working with us on the development of our middle college program, and they will be at the table with us as we construct a facility that will actually support the program. We have small high schools in this district that we have tried before, and we have never, ever taken the opportunity to have our buildings match and support the program. And that's what we're going to do. We are determined to have this middle college work because our kids desperately need that program.
Thank you. We have a couple of callers online. We have a few more minutes, so we'll go to Gary, and if you can make your comment or question short so we could have responses from our guests. Good morning, Gary.
Certainly. Good morning very much. Enjoy the guests. Here's my issue with raising any kind of bond. I think people are just they're sick of their taxes going up. They're sick of their money going to basically what is a money pit. Our children are not being educated properly. You know, we've got the worst educated system in the world, and money's not going to fix the problem. And part of the problem in Northeast Portland is there's just not the people to support, the children to support. That's why Vancouver area schools have grown at the rate they have grown. We've moved out of there 10 years ago because we saw the Portland School District education system just go down the toilet.
And so a question or comment for our guest, please?
My comment is this bond is not going to help anything. The school district has enough money. They need to reduce teachers' pensions and teachers' salary because they're making too much money and get rid of administration.
Okay, let me get some clarity in terms of your position. If you lived in the Portland district, you would oppose both measures. Is that correct?
I would oppose any monies for the Portland School District. I would actually reduce their...
All right. Well, thank you so much for your call.
Can I address one thing there? Just so people understand in terms of our what we have tried to do in terms of being efficient in Portland Public Schools, our employees pay the 6% employee pickup for their retirement plan. If you look at most school districts, if you look at city, county, and state workers, that is not the case. So Portland Public Schools, our employees are already doing that. Our employees are agreeing to no cost of living increases going forward. Our administrative expenses are 4% compared to 8% nationally for urban school districts. We have done everything we can to channel our money into the classroom and to support our kids.
Thank you, Bobby. Mm-hmm. And we have a couple of callers. Let me remind you that those of you in the Portland Public School District, you will receive your ballots on, they will be mailed on Friday, and they are due back on May 17th. We have with us Bobby Regan, who is speaking in favor of Measure 26-121 and Measure 26-122, and Lainey Block-Wilker, who is in favor of the levy
for the teacher positions.
Operating. And opposing to the building bond. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning. I'm Suzanne.
Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning. I am a parent of a fifth grade student at Alameda Elementary School and a high school age student in the Grant neighborhood. And I'm calling because I looked at all of the seismic data. And I realized that there are 15 schools that are rated as highly collapsible by PBS's own data. including my son's school, Alameda, which is the largest K-5 school in the district with over 800 students and staff roaming the building on any given day. This is about twice the size of Jefferson High School. And yet, not a dollar is going to be spent toward any seismic upgrades in my son's school. And when I look at the list of these 15 schools, we don't have Sabin, Roseway Heights, we don't have Da Vinci, we don't have James John, we don't have Skyline. All of these schools where children are extremely vulnerable, and yet not a dollar of this bond is going toward seismic upgrades. And my question is Bobby Regan and the school board and PPS, are they going to be willing to pull these kids out of the rubble when the big earthquake happens? And my second question is...
Okay, but let's go to...
Let's try to get the first one.
Okay, can I just add one more thing? What I don't understand is we have a lot of schools with under 350 students, 350 to 400 students that could be consolidated like the schools in Lake Oswego. I mean, these are tough times, and we have to make tough choices, and we need to, we shouldn't be paying for administrators at all of these separate little schools when really the writing is on the wall, our economy is not getting better, and we need to consolidate.
Okay, well, thank you. And let's see, let's get our guests respond. Bobby?
So I think what Suzanne is bringing up more than anything is the dire condition of our schools. I think we all recognize that. What's astounding to me is that you have a group that is saying, learn now, build later. So what they're basically saying is, do nothing now. Just wait. Let's think about it some more. Let's think about which schools. That, to me, is an irresponsible position. What we are doing is putting a stake in the ground and saying that we are going to get started on this reinvestment. We know that we could not possibly get to every single school in our district. When people talk about these 15 buildings that will collapse, that is based on a 2007 Oregon Department of Geology seismic assessment, which was based on rapid visual screening. It's essentially they drove by schools and they took a look. That is not what we are basing our criteria on. We went way deeper than that. We have done seismic work in 60 of our buildings already. We have 9 buildings now that will have full rebuilds as a result of this bond. We put 9 roofs on schools in the last couple of years, which provides for increased stability. We have some other seismic work in this, some more roofs in this bond. To suggest that the best plan is to build later is absolutely irresponsible.
Okay. We are coming towards the close of an hour and want to make sure that both of our guests have an opportunity to share some closing comments. And Lainey, why don't you respond to some of the concerns that Bobby just raised and also urge people to vote as you want them to vote, Emily?
Okay. Well, I'd like to address this issue that it's irresponsible to wait. And what we're saying is it's irresponsible to not do some prioritization and to fix the worst buildings that serve the most kids. And it's not okay to do 5 of 9 small schools and leave the majority of our students to wait 10 to 25 years for safe and updated learning environments. We need to do phase 1 right. The district needs to make some really tough decisions about how many schools we can operate and prioritize. It is irresponsible to spend taxpayer money on small school rebuilds for buildings that may end up being consolidated. It is irresponsible for our children, for our high school students, to have them sitting in study halls where they can't get classes, to have 45-plus kids in a class if they're able to get that class. It's irresponsible to throw high school students under the bus to even put this bond on the ballot because this district has not made the tough decisions about high school redesign. High school students are the biggest loser in this bond. If those of you who saw the Oregonian, there was an article, School Savings Plan Hits Snags. We have already cut 44 teachers to get the endorsement for this bond, and remaining teachers are supposed to teach 6 out of 8 periods. That is a 20% increase in their students and workload. Kids are sitting in study halls because they can't get classes. They're in huge classes where they can't get basic questions answered, and it's going to get worse. So we're saying prioritize education and come up with a better bond that is linked to a plan to protect and educate our students.
And if people want more information about your position, how may they contact your group?
You can go to www.learnnowbuildlater.org.
And Bobby, some closing comments and why you support both measures?
Sure. Again, our levy is we're going out for the maximum rate that we can so that we can ensure that our kids have teachers and reasonable class sizes and do the best we can with them. So I want to thank both of you for the opportunity. And here's my request to listeners. I would ask that you fast forward 10 years. If you vote no, our school buildings are now 75 years old with unsafe and outdated learning environments. The school district is spending more and more of its operating budget to patch roofs and keep old, inefficient oil furnaces running. The school board is trying to pass a bond. Folks are saying it's not the right time, it's too much money, it's not the perfect package. And school board members are being criticized for not taking care of our facilities. If you vote yes, Portland Public Schools will likely be halfway through its second bond, rebuilding its 12th or 13th school. Our learning environments would be safer and more academically appropriate. Teachers and students would be motivated knowing that our community cares about them and will be attracting more families and businesses to Portland. I love this city. We have parks, open space, mass transit, food carts, bike lanes, livable neighborhoods, and we're a city where 85% of parents still send their kids to public schools. It's time to live up to our reputation and begin this reinvestment, and I thank you.
Well, thank you both.
Both, yes.
And we urge all those within the Portland School District to look at your ballot and vote.
Most importantly, do your research and vote. Vote for your future and mine. This has been More Talk Radio with Cecil Prescott, myself, Celeste Carey. Stay tuned. We have more news, information, entertainment designed with you in mind. All from your community connection, KBOO Portland.